Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
We sure do.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. We're in the Skyline Studio A, downtown Chicago, overlooking what was a nice day to start. Now it's kind of clouded up. Wherever you are, I appreciate you tuning in. It's a cloudy, cool day downtown Chicago, but it very, 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 very much feels like football weather. And the hockey season's underway. You're into NHL hockey and the Chicago Blackhawks. WGN Radio's got that for you. You found us on the stream, and we sure appreciate that. So we will go all the way until 3 o'clock, as we always do. We never get stopped on WGN. Your favorite shows continue, and then sometimes we split off from the radio signal to do them so that we can do White Sox baseball or Northwestern football or basketball. In this case, Chicago Blackhawks hockey. Hopefully the team gets back into the playoffs. This is my luck. You know, I come back to Chicago from Minnesota the year after they win the Stanley Cup, and then they don't get into the playoffs. I came here after the Cubs won the World Series. I'm due for a win. Oh, by the way, speaking of all of that, I've got tickets to give away to the Blackhawks right now. Be caller number 20. How about you call 312-981-7200? Call 312-981-7200 right now. Producer Elif will take caller number 20. Elif will take caller number 20 right now. And the 20th caller gets a pair of tickets to a Blackhawks game, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating and Air Conditioning and Plumbing. For the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingandcooling.com. And tune into the Ro Khan Show today at 4:40 for another chance to win Blackhawks tickets from Four Seasons. The game we're giving away will be Saturday, October 12th. Hey, that's right around the corner. In fact, that'll be next Saturday. And I'm not sure what time that game is. I assume it'll be an evening game rather than an afternoon game, because that afternoon, this is just on my radar, is when we do our Teddy Roosevelt show, Blackhawks versus Winnipeg Jets. I guess that'll be the home opener? Saturday, October 12th. Saturday, October 12th. You want a pair of tickets to that? Call right now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 20th caller right now gets tickets to see the Blackhawks. You know, the other day we were talking about the amount of improvements that J.B. Pritzker did to the interior of the Thompson Center. It's kind of ironic now that I think about it, because the conversation is about selling the Thompson Center, the State of Illinois building, that big orange monstrosity downtown, and even demolishing it and giving it over to, you know, somebody will develop it. The state could get a few hundred million dollars for it, so that's a good thing. It's not enough to really move the needle very far, but go ahead and get rid of that thing. And yet, inside that building where the governor office is, he's put several hundred thousand dollars of his own money into renovating it. The story was that I guess some Republicans have offices up there, too. And so the new carpet runs right up to the line where their offices begin. So JB did his place, but he didn't do the offices for or area up there where they are for his political opponents. And I said I thought he should. If you've got that much money, what the hell? Just do the whole thing. But it was pointed out that he spent a lot of money renovating other parts of the infrastructure in the state of Illinois. For instance, we have a governor's mansion in, I think, DuQuoin. He spent a lot of money on that. There's a story in the Sun-Times today about his largesse, if you will. It says here, billionaire J.B. Pritzker, the richest sitting politician in America. Think about that statement. The richest sitting politician in America. You know who another rich sitting politician is?
That's interesting.
The president of the United States. They are listing his wealth is greater than Donald Trump's. He's shelling out another $850,000 from his own pockets to renovate further the governor mansion in Springfield. That cranks up the tally of his personal funds, I guess he and his wife's, his family's personal funds they've used to cover mansion expenses, government expenses.
Governor Rauner just spent, I think, his own money to rehab the governor's mansion.
He did.
What needs to be done?
As always, the plumbing. It's not sexy. The money will be spent on plumbing. I'm not making that up.
Okay, because that's kind of a joke, too. But
I know. Isn't that ironic? Renovations include tile on the first floor, remodeling guest bedrooms and bathrooms, and updating existing plumbing. The plumbing will always get you. So he has spent, $850,000 renovating the governor's mansion in Springfield. Listen to this. That cranks up the tally of personal funds he's used on government expenses, including doubling the salaries and paying for other renovations. He spent now $3.45 million in total. Because remember, he doubled the salaries of about 20 people that work for the state for him. And he said, I'll go ahead and give you guys a raise of 100%, and I'll pay for it out of my own pocket. I've never heard of such a thing. By the way, do we have a winner, Ms. Garris, on the tickets?
Yeah.
We do?
Yes. His name is Les from Valparaiso.
Les in Valparaiso wins the tickets. Congratulations, Les. Wes. Pritzker, of course, is an heir to the Hyatt Hotel fortune. He broke campaign finance records by giving his own campaign. How much did he spend when he ran for governor? Do you remember that number? I'll give it to you. It's $172 million of his own money to run for governor. You know you have a lot of money when for a job that pays a couple $100,000 a year, you spend $171 million of your own dollars to get it. Meg Whitman, who wanted to be governor of California in 2010, spent $144 million of her own money on her campaign. She did not win. And, of course, J.B. Pritzker did. He spent about $12.2 million to pay his campaign staff. Pritzker's worth an estimated $3.2 billion. Forbes puts the president at $3.1 billion. In January, Pritzker doled out $800,000 to match the ticket sales from his inaugural ball. Maroon 5 played at his inaugural ball. He paid for that. And then I don't exactly understand this. It says, so he spends $800,000 to match ticket sales. So people bought tickets to his inaugural ball to the tune of $800,000. And then he took a matching amount, $800,000, and gave it to the Cabrini Green Legal Aid and the Illinois Fairground Foundation. I don't know what those organizations are. I didn't know he did that. That's all. I guess terrific. According to the Illinois Comptroller's Office, I'm reading this in the Sun-Times today, Pritzker is paying out at least $1.43 million every year to double the salaries of 20 key staffers. Last month, Pritzker spent $275,000 to renovate the governor's office at the Thompson Center. And he's also privately funded renovations to the DuCoin downstate residence. That cost him $100,000. He does not get much credit for this. He should. Former Governor Steve pointed this out. Bruce Rauner launched his own privately funded $15 million renovation of the mansion. I don't remember how much of that was Rauner's money. Says launched his own privately funded $15 million renovation. I don't know if that was all Bruce Rauner's money or not, but that's the one upside of having billionaires run for office in your state or win office in your state. They pump a lot of private money into their campaigns, and they have the money to just say, oh, this place is a mess. I've got this. My pet project, by the way, is at the the Lincoln Foundation, the organization that warehouses, has all of these Abraham Lincoln artifacts. The gloves and the hat that he wore to the Ford Theater the night he was shot. Lock of his hair. His Bible. All sorts of Civil War and Lincoln memorabilia were purchased in a lot at an auction years ago. And this Lincoln Foundation, based in Chicago and Springfield, put up a lot of money, millions of dollars, to buy it, that they now have to pay back. They had to borrow the money, and they don't have the money to pay it back. It's not a well-endowed organization. Our namesake, Abraham Lincoln, and there's not enough money in the kitty to pay for this stuff. So now they're having to sell off. I'm not sure where they are, but this has been where they've been going. The plan has been to sell off a lot of those artifacts to literally pay the debt on their purchase, which is kind of upside down, right? But that's where they're going. They got no money. They at least have the assets. So some of the most prized pieces in the collection would generate enough money to pay for them all. I don't know why JB doesn't write a check for that. To me, that would be a good idea. They could keep it at that beautiful Lincoln and Civil War Museum we have, the relatively new one downstate. I haven't heard any word of that. So I wanted to catch you up on that. But then while I was just looking up the lives of famous people, rich people, private citizens, now in this case the governor, I thought I should find out more about Hunter Biden. So I did the wiki on Hunter Biden. Right, the president says today that he's not interested in politics. He's only interested in ferreting corruption and fighting it. Fair enough. And he labels Joe Biden and his son Hunter as stone-cold criminals. They're corrupt, blah, blah, blah. Here is the wiki on Hunter Biden. I mean, we ought to know a little bit about the guy, right? He's a partner at Rosemont Seneca Partners, which is an international consulting firm. Biden served on the board of Burisma, B-U-R-I-S-M-A. That's the company you're hearing a lot about. Burisma Holdings, a major Ukrainian natural gas producer from 2014 to 2019. In 2019, President Trump claimed that Joe Biden had sought the dismissal of a Ukrainian prosecutor in order to protect Hunter Biden. Trump's alleged attempt to pressure the Ukrainian government to investigate the Bidens by withholding foreign aid triggered the impeachment inquiry. That's where we are today. Never mind that. Hunter Biden's mother and younger sister, Naomi, were killed in an automobile crash December 18th, 1972. Biden and his older brother, Beau, were also seriously injured in that crash. You probably know about that. Hunter and Beau Biden later encouraged their father to marry again, and he did. He married Jill. Jill Jacobs became Hunter and Beau's stepmother in 1977. In 1992, he graduated from Georgetown University, had a bachelor's degree in history. After that, he went to Georgetown University Law Center for a year. He eventually graduated from Yale Law School. After graduating from law school, he took a position at MB Bank, MBNA America, a major bank holding company. From 1998 to 2001, he served in the Department of Commerce. He focused on e-commerce policy. He became a lobbyist in 2001. Biden was appointed by President Bush to the board of directors of Amtrak, and he was on that board from 2006 to 2009. After his dad was elected vice president in 2008, he resigned his position at Amtrak on the board of directors, and he left his career as a lobbyist, along with Christopher Hines, the son of Teresa Hines and the stepson of John Kerry and Devon Archer. Biden founded the investment firm Rosemont Seneca Partners. He also became an attorney with the law firm Boies Schiller Flexner and founded Eudora Global. That's a venture capital firm. He's a venture capitalist. In May of 2013, he's a lobbyist, too. In May of 2013, Biden was selected as the direct commission officer in the U.S. Navy Reserve. So he's in the U.S. Navy Reserve briefly in 2013. The following month, after he goes in, he tests positive for cocaine during a urinalysis test and was subsequently discharged. According to Biden, he had unwittingly consumed the cocaine after being given cigarettes that he believed were surreptitiously laced with the drug. Somebody put the cocaine in the cigarette that he had. He did not know it was there. In the aftermath of the 2014 Ukrainian Revolution, Mykola Zlongovizhensky assembled a high-profile international board to oversee his oil and gas company, Burisma Holdings. the largest natural gas producer in Ukraine. Among those who joined the board of directors in 2014 were Biden and the former president of Poland. Biden served on the board of Burisma until his term expired in April of 2019. His compensation was up to $50,000 per month in some months. Because Vice President Biden played a major role in U.S. policy towards Ukraine, some Ukrainian anti-corruption advocates and Obama administration officials expressed concern that Hunter Biden's having joined the board could create the appearance of a conflict of interest and undermine Biden's anti-corruption work in the Ukraine. While serving as Vice President, Joe Biden joined other Western leaders in encouraging the government of Ukraine to fire that country's top prosecutor. About his personal life, it says that Biden, this is kind of interesting too, and you've probably heard this before as well, married Kathleen Buell in 1993. And they have three daughters, Naomi, Finnegan, and Maisie. Biden and Kathleen separated in 2015, and they divorced in 2016. In between there, in 2016, between the separation and the divorce, he began dating Hallie Biden, who is the widow of his brother, Beau. Beau has passed away. His widowed wife, he started dating then. And Biden and Hallie starting in 2016. Biden and Hallie ended their relationship by early 2019. In May of 2019, Biden married Melissa Cohen. She's a filmmaker from South Africa. So life is complicated for Hunter Biden. And that's his wiki. It's 123. This is WGN, the ICE director from Chicago. It's a new guy in town. He's from Dallas. He oversees Wisconsin, Missouri, Kentucky, Michigan, Indiana, this region of the United States as the ICE director. And I think that he and Lori Lightfoot should get together. They have not yet. She's spoken out harshly against him, and he said, I don't appreciate what she's doing. He will join us after the 2 o'clock news. Remember, it's Friday, so we'll do our Bright Side of Life segment too. Where will you be at 2:40 this afternoon? That's when we ask you to call in. Tell us some good news while you're smiling. We will smile with you. We'll also give you our rundown of fun things to do this weekend. It's a segment we call Fun Things to Do This Weekend. Steve Bertrand has a bunch of people in Prague right now with Steve Bertrand Travel.
Yeah.
For the Blackhawks game.
They got some nice seats, too. One of the fans sent me a picture of their seats looking pretty good.
Yeah. I wonder what the attendance is. I guess it would be huge in Prague, right? That's a big hockey part of the world.
Yeah, I would think so.
So, and then...
a lot of people were reaching out to me trying to buy tickets that they were looking for in the secondary market, so I'm assuming it was sold out.
Really? Wait a minute. In Prague?
Yeah.
People are reaching out to Chicagoans?
No, Chicagoans who had plans to go or wanted to go. They wanted to know if I had any extra tickets.
They weren't part of your trip because didn't your trip include tickets?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have three different groups going.
How about that? So how many people?
I think it's like 100. Well, it's 128 total.
I don't understand that, to be honest with you. I mean, that must be 128 people who thought, I always wanted to go to Prague. And the Blackhawks were... Because, they play a lot of games right here in Chicago.
Yeah, but it's cool to go see them overseas. I think a lot of people are going to go see the Bears play on Sunday.
In London.
London. The Cubs are playing in London next summer.
Isn't that amazing? I don't have any problems with that. I think sports can be a great international unifier. And I don't blame them for wanting to market their leagues to an international community. I don't know how well football or...
I mean,
baseball
I can see
translate.
Right. Hockey I get because there's already a hockey audience over there.
Yeah, right.
So they'll, just try to build NHL fans. I don't know, but, they're the experts.
Well, one of the Bears was on TV the other day, and he said, who's our quarterback now? It's not Trubisky. It's Trubisky. It's some guy. I'll think of it in just a second.
Joe Theismann?
Yeah, the Bears quarterback. Yes, Joe Theismann. Anyway, he was on TV the other day, and he said that he's played in London before. And, the Londoners will show up for the game as kind of a curiosity. He said, but they go bananas whenever the field goal kicker comes onto the field. He said, like, you've never heard the stadium louder than during the kickoff. They go, wow, he kicked that ball really hard.
Kicks, they understand.
I know that it's a soccer country. Right. So, like, the field goal, the point after, they just think that's crazy.
Well, look, my wife has cousins in Dublin, and they know far more about the NBA and NFL than I do. Far,
really?
It's not even close.
Wow.
So, I mean, there definitely is an audience there for American sports.
I was thinking about travel and thinking about you the other day also, Steve, when I saw the story about the couple who were from Japan, and they went to a cafe in Rome. Did you see what happened to them?
No.
Okay, so then this may have happened to you or me before. You sit down in a foreign restaurant, cafe, and you're not good at this. And they got their bill for two plates of pasta and some fish, and it came to $530.
Wow.
And on Yelp or TripAdvisor, they've, you know, said, hey, everybody's warning people about this restaurant. And I'm just wondering if that's ever happened to you when you're in a foreign place and you go, I'm getting ripped off here. If I had a bill and it was $500 for some pasta, even, you know, I don't understand the euro, I don't know what things cost, but I know this pasta and fish should not cost $530. I would walk out. I would not pay it.
You mean, bolt?
I would.
Dine and dash?
Well, I'll rob you of $25 of
right.
fish before I let you rob me of $530.
Well, how did that happen? Didn't they look at the menu? I mean, there must have been a price on the menu.
Right. I don't understand all of the details. The owner of the place said, it says right there, $18 for the pasta. $18 for the pasta. I think they had one beverage. But the fish they ordered, because I guess, you know, you pick out the fish. And they picked out some fish.
Picked out the owner's favorite fish.
And it was a $400 fish.
Wow.
But that's just a sucker bet. That's just a trap. That's attention, restaurant owners. If you have a $530 pasta and fish dish, you're a crook. That's just criminal. You're just setting tourists up, and I would have bolted before I paid that. Pretty bold sitting here.
And Brenda would have stayed behind and paid the bill for you.
I don't know what Brenda would have done about that, but we can't run that fast anymore, so we probably would have been caught. All right, that's that. After the news, Steve Bertrand, I'll talk to my friend Clay Jenkinson, the presidential scholar, historian, and the man who portrays Teddy Roosevelt. Just a couple more questions to ask him about our show next Saturday.
One of my favorite characters ever on screen is probably Heath Ledger's Joker. I think that character is so fantastic. And for somebody to try to live up to that, I thought was going to be an almost impossible task. And Joaquin Phoenix almost gets there.
Yesterday's show, we were visiting with the entertainment reporter from ABC News about his review of the movie Joker. I haven't seen it. I don't think I'm going to either.
I love the street cafe. I'm on a street team. I love Meryl Streep in the flick. One true thing. I love traffic. I love the colors yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
Is there a movie on your radar, Steve, or the one you're thinking about seeing? You go, boy, now it's coming out. I can't wait to go see that.
You know, I really enjoyed Downton Abbey, and we were gone when the movie came out, but I don't. No, I don't think so.
Brenda saw that, and she was kind of meh, you know.
That's kind of what I was afraid was going to happen.
Yeah. The movie, I think that did actually pretty well. You know, the movie that isn't doing real well, and it didn't have as wide a release, maybe that explains part of it, but it's the Renee Zellweger movie about Judy Garland. That's not lighting it up. And maybe because, you know, a lot of people that go to movies these days don't know who Judy Garland was.
They needed to give her a superpower.
I'm telling you, that's right. If she and Rosemary Clooney formed a team, you know, of some sort of crime fighters or something, maybe they'd have a better chance at it. It's 1:37 on WGN. Clay Jenkinson is the man behind the costume when we do Teddy Roosevelt and Thomas Jefferson. 1 week from tomorrow, we're going to be at Elgin Community College's Blizzard Theater, and I asked Clay to join us one more time just to preview the show a little bit. Hi, Clay. How are you?
Hey, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. By the way, you know, so when we get ready to do one of our shows on stage, you will come on in costume and as Theodore Roosevelt, and I'll come on as John Williams, local American talk show host. You and I talk a little bit, then people get a chance to ask questions to Teddy as well. And as I get ready for the show, I always Google Teddy Roosevelt News. And he is in the news a little bit these days, which is kind of cool for somebody who's been dead for 100 years, right?
What has he done this time?
Well, Scaramucci brought him up. Anthony Scaramucci brought him up and said that it was one of his anti-Trump rants. And he said that, you know, he would not be up on Mount Rushmore with Teddy Roosevelt, who is one of the greatest presidents of all time. So you got that going for you. Here's a headline today. Raffle offers deer hunt with modern day Teddy Roosevelt, Donald Trump Jr. So if you want to go hunting with Donald Trump Jr., like, I don't know, did Teddy Roosevelt, did they raffle off a chance to go hunt with him?
No, of course not. And, you know, some things are sane and some things are insane. But to compare Theodore Roosevelt with Donald Trump Jr. Is obscenity. Theodore Roosevelt wrote 40 books. He read a book a day. He was maybe the best intellectually prepared president in American history. He had geopolitical understanding that enabled him to sort of bring the United States into the 20th century. In fact, he essentially reinvented the presidency and inaugurated what's been called the American century. He was a very gifted linguist. He was a man of extraordinary capacity in almost an unbelievable range of areas. He was an explorer who explored the last uncharted river in South America. And to compare him to the son of a billionaire who has never had to do any of the hard reading, the hard thinking, the disciplined work in life is just openly appalling. And that would be true if this were a claim made by Barack Obama for one of his daughters. Roosevelt doesn't get to be compared to routine human beings, whatever their political affiliation.
You know, I just finished this latest book about his crowded hour, about his charge up Kettle Hill, San Juan Hill, it's famously called, and the Spanish-American War, which was fought in Cuba, and which Americans really don't have much recollection of or understanding of. And it wasn't one of our great wars. It was this skirmish down there. But I say all of that to say this, having read this book about the war in Cuba, Roosevelt was the real deal. He was in the trenches with those guys. He really did run and ride in front of the fire and led the troops. There were some other generals who laid back. There were some soldiers who, when they got there, realized this was more than they had bargained for. But if Roosevelt stands on stage next Saturday and says, you know, I was in the thick of it. I am a true war hero. I'm not going to argue with him. He really was, right?
He was. In addition to that, as you know from reading this really interesting book, he went out of his way. So he signed a circular letter insisting that the troops after the war was won were just being left there and that they were getting sick and that this was unconscionably bad logistics. And when his men were hungry for some real food, he went behind the lines and found an American purveyor and he bought bags of beans at his own expense to take to his men. I mean, this is not a grandstanding sort of person. He was capable of grandstanding, but he was, as you say, the real McCoy here. And if you compare him to Bill Clinton, who was a draft dodger, and to G.W. Bush, who got a cushy job in the Air National Guard and didn't even show up for that, and, of course, the current president who had, some sort of foot problem that prevented him from fighting in Vietnam, you see the difference. You can say what you want about Theodore Roosevelt, John, that, you know, that he was a jingoist and a warmonger and that there's a kind of a wacky, violent streak, a bloodlust in him. But he was a true patriot, and he understood that if you want to be the leader of this country, you don't duck the wars of your time. You don't get a doctor to say, oh, you have foot problems, therefore you can't do what average Americans had to go and do in 1968 or 1970.
Yeah.
And I don't want to pick on Trump. Bill Clinton is our first draft dodger president, and he somehow got away with it. So it's a different era.
Well, he really, how old was he when he went to Cuba? Was he in his 40s?
He was in his 40s. He's a little too old for this, and his wife was deathly ill. She had had a terrible gynecological problem and a serious operation at a time when that was really life-threatening, and she begged him not to go. But he later said that he would have left her deathbed to go fight in that war.
And he really wanted to. I mean, Which is another thing I don't understand. I don't understand that bloodlust on his own part, like willing to shed his own. But I don't understand why American, like, so he, the Rough Riders were this group of people that he was able to get. It was elites from the East and cowboys from the West, and this amalgam of Americana wanted to fight with him. But the whole, people were in tears that they would not be allowed to go to Cuba and fight in the war. And by the way, they had machine guns back then. I mean, it wasn't going to be a romp. I don't understand why we wanted to fight in Cuba so much.
Well, we know too much now. You know, we have media 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. We get to see the mayhem of war. It's not quite so heroic, and particularly not since World War One. You know, Cuba was what John Hay, the Secretary of State, called a splendid little war, kind of a fun little war. But it was more serious than we think, as you've discovered in this book. But if you think of what happened in 1914, when the people of Britain and the people of Germany and the people of France marched off to war, you know, joyfully, people waving their handkerchiefs at them, "We'll be back by Christmas. It was going to be glorious. This was going to tone up European society." And 5 years later, there were 25 million killed, people who were literally mown down by machine guns across the no man's land in northern France. So the industrialization of warfare that happened beginning with the Civil War and had a kind of a blip during the Spanish-American War found its true expression in World War One. And I just came back from 10 days in England. The British are still more appalled by what happened in World War One than they are by what happened in World War Two, because World War One was such just a profound shock to the idea of a civilization that had produced Shakespeare and Beethoven.
You know, I'll stop talking to you about Cuba now, but wasn't it after that that he gave a famous speech about the strenuous life and the virtue of it? And I think he gave that in Chicago, didn't he?
He did, and it became the title of one of his 40 books. And it really became almost his life's mission statement. And you know what? I agree with him. Not about war, not about killing elephants and, you know, white rhinoceroses. Those things don't appeal to me, but his patriotism does in the wars. But I'll tell you, the idea of the strenuous life, it's so fun to talk about, but we are an out-of-shape nation with a really lousy diet and a lot of Barca loungers and a lot of NFL on Sundays. And Roosevelt's view would be, you stop watching the Detroit Lions and the Chicago Bears and get out and hike, get out and row a boat, get out and do something. I mean, America has become a really sedentary, and frankly obese nation of opioids and all the stuff that we all talk about all the time.
He was a teetotaler, too. He didn't drink beer.
He wasn't going to do any of that. He was a sarsaparilla man, John. So when you and I go out for our celebratory lunch on that Saturday, you can have all the gin and tonic you want. I have to have only sarsaparilla.
I don't even know what sarsaparilla is, but what's that, root beer or something? It's not alcohol,
yeah,
right?
It's a root beer. It's a Diet Coke for 1902, you know. But he actually sued a newspaper in Michigan over this because they said he was publicly drunk during the 1912 Bull Moose campaign. And so he sued them, and he won, and he got the mandatory lowest settlement. It was 6 cents. That's all he wanted. He was just trying to prove a point. But one of his friends, John, he called in all of his friends from all over the place to come give depositions for him. And one of his friends on the witness stand said, "Look, he just seems drunk."
It's funny. So, as I told you a moment ago, Clay Jenkinson is on a phone line. You may recognize his voice. A version of that comes out of his mouth when he's on stage with us, either acting as Teddy Roosevelt or Thomas Jefferson. It'll be Roosevelt on stage with us at the Elgin Community College Blizzard Theater next Saturday. So I told you I typed in Roosevelt in news to see what pops up, and there's Scaramucci, and you know, there's a library story about a Roosevelt library in North Dakota. Don Jr. is going to be the modern-day Teddy Roosevelt on a hunt. But another story popped up. Teddy Roosevelt got sued for libel. He said he enjoyed it very much. It's the way this reads, that whole thing was not a lark for him, but a chance for him to sit on the, you know, in the witness stand and talk for a while was good for him.
Well, that's a great story. I can't go into details, but we should do it on stage next Saturday. But what happened was that he was sued for libel by a man named Barnes in New York, and he had called him a corruptionist and a crook and, you know, crony capitalism and all that. And so this could have destroyed Roosevelt. He could have really lost reputation and a ton of money. So he's in the trial, and he gets on the stand, and he tells, like, stories of hunting in Africa and stories of all of his other exploits. And the judge keeps saying, hey, stick to the case here. But the whole crowd is like, no, more, tell us stories. And then the Lusitania was sunk, and there were a bunch of German-Americans on the jury, and Roosevelt's handler said, just for once in your whole life, I mean, just once, just keep your mouth shut. If you go out and talk about this, you're going to lose this case, and it's going to be the end of everything for you. So he leaves the court, gets out there, and says, I want to talk about what's happened with the Lusitania. And he gives this impassioned attack on Germany, and he says, if I had been president, and I had known that ship was going to sail, and they'd put ads in the newspapers saying that the Americans should probably not sail on it and so on. He said, I would have marched down the entire diplomatic corps of Germany, the ambassador and all of his staff, and put him on the Lusitania and said, now, if you want to sink it, go right ahead, you Huns. And so his handlers were just like Trump's must be at this moment.
Well,
just
boy.
But he won. So the jury found for him because he was right, and they loved it. And he was like, tell us another story about a bear, would you?
When he survived his assassination attempt, a guy came up and shot him point blank. He survived that. Was that in nearby Milwaukee that took place?
Yes, but he convalesced in Chicago. So he was shot at an auditorium in Milwaukee on October 14th, 1912. He then went on to give an 84-minute speech with the bullet in him and blood pouring out of his chest. When he finally went to the hospital, they kind of figured, they did an x-ray, it was very new then, and they realized that the bullet was not going to kill him, so they left it in him for the rest of his life. And then he was transferred to Chicago, where his wife Edith came out, and he convalesced in your city, the Chicago Hog Butcher of the World, where I'll be next Saturday.
So, protocol is that a sitting president does not criticize the past presidents, and past presidents don't meddle in the affairs of the current president. Barack Obama has been largely silent about Donald Trump, but Donald Trump has not let Barack Obama, or for that matter, Hillary Clinton, go. I wonder what Roosevelt would have said about that. How did he react to the president before him or the president after him?
Well, we know this, so I won't say what he would think about the current president, but go ahead and do the math on your own time. Roosevelt was so awful to Woodrow Wilson that he may have been the worst former president ever with respect to his successors. I mean, he set the standard for the worst possible behavior of a former president to a duly elected president of the United States.
What did he do?
Woodrow Wilson, he thought Wilson was a wimp, that all this talk about making the world safe for democracy, and, you know, was there something of being too proud to fight, and all that. He just thought, that's nuts. And he was right. His view was, we are going to get in the war. We're going to have to. We're America. And we better get in sooner, because if we don't, we'll lose our chance to control the post-war fate of the world. And by not being prepared for this, we're only making things worse and really leading to the death of millions of Europeans. We're America. We have to get in this war. And he thought Wilson was just an insane, just like a moron for not doing this. And he called him names. He wrote article after article. I mean, he makes Trump look like a sissy when it comes to name calling. One of the names he called Wilson was a Byzantine logothete. We don't even know what that means, but he called him a Byzantine logothete. I'm going to call you that on the stage.
I do. I have time to load up a response.
But no, H.L. Mencken, who was a great journalist and sarcast and satirist, said, watching Roosevelt behave towards Wilson, he said, the best thing we could do with our former presidents is just take them out and shoot them.
Oh, gosh. Well, no, we can't do that. But in fact, I thought that after Roosevelt's second term, his first full term, he then went away to Africa. Didn't he sort of get out of Dodge as a favor to Wilson so people wouldn't be...
You know, you could do the program next Saturday because you and I have done this before. You know all the punchlines.
I do not.
You could do both sides, John. You're not mean enough.
I'm not convincing.
Yeah, he went on a year-long safari in Africa. And, you know, and he says about that. So he wanted to get out of Taft's way so that Taft could establish his own rhythm and didn't want Taft looking over his shoulder all the time and so on. He said, imagine following me.
Exactly.
Imagine following me. So he was right about that. So he went on this year-long safari with his son Kermit, and then he did a grand tour of Europe. And he went to the funeral of King Edward in London, and he gave lectures at Oxford, and he got his Nobel Peace Prize, and he gave the famous speech at the Sorbonne on October of 1910, where he says, it's not the critic who counts, the credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena.
Yeah.
And so this was a great period in Roosevelt's life. And then he came back in June 1910, and it was the largest parade in the history of New York City. I mean, he was like a world historical beloved citizen coming home after his time away, like a president in exile, almost. And then he turned on Taft and ran in 1912 in the Bull Moose campaign and got 29%, which is gigantic, but as you know, not enough to elect a president. And so it all sort of deteriorated after that.
So imagine that. I mean, you're Donald Trump. You win the presidency. A year later, Barack Obama comes back after a year in Africa, and the largest parade in the history of New York greets him like a returning hero. Or just do the math on any two presidents. The ex-president comes back after a year. That had to gall then the sitting president, right? Hurt his feelings a little bit.
It did, but it also, I mean, he got it. I mean, Taft loved Roosevelt, and he got it. He got it. Like, this only happens... This is like the black swan, you know. This only happens once every hundreds and hundreds of years that a person of this magnitude. So imagine if Donald Trump were a man of many languages and one of the most brilliantly educated men in the world and who knew all of the economics and the geopolitics and water issues and global climate issues, and he was a master of almost everything, and just... And he had a mythology of being this man of extraordinary righteousness and virtue. Imagine Trump's energy level and his charisma coupled with a true genius. Now you've got Roosevelt. And so anyone who follows him is going to be like, wow, how do you even get any attention in this country when you're following a man of that sort? And so Taft understood this and he accepted it. But what he didn't get was that Roosevelt could not stand not to be in power, that it killed him to be out of power. And so he was going to do what it took to get back at the center of the arena, including roll over one of his best friends, William Howard Taft, if necessary. So that's the darker side of the Roosevelt persona. And I think we see that in people of this sort that have these gigantic egos. You don't see that in G.W. Bush. Certainly not. He's been an extraordinary former president. You see it a little in Jimmy Carter from time to time. You don't see it all in Barack Obama. He's been unbelievably restrained in the face of provocation. I'm guessing we'll see a fair amount of it from Mr. Trump whenever it is that he leaves. And Roosevelt had it. He just couldn't take it that somebody else could possibly be the president of the United States. And particularly during World War I, he thought he didn't get a war. He lived under 7 years and 171 days of peace. And he thought, hey, if there's going to be a world war, I get to be president.
I'm the guy. If ever there was a guy built for that job, it's him.
And he's right, except the only problem was, how do you keep him in the Oval Office? You know, he wants to ride his horse over into the Flanders Field.
He did. He wanted to serve in World War I then. I mean, you thought he was too old to fight
Wilson.
In Cuba. He was way too old to fight in World War I. He wanted to go over there.
And his health has been broken, and, I mean, he's fat. He's unfit. His health was broken. So he goes into Wilson. You know, like, he's treated Wilson worse than President Trump has treated Obama or Mrs. Clinton.
Wow.
He goes into Wilson and says, no offense, let's just regard that as all like water under the dam. Now I want you to send me over to France with a Rough Rider group. And Wilson is like, well, you know, there is justice in this world. We're not going to, you're too old. And by the way, you're fat.
Yeah. Well, and he would have, if he had been in the field, he probably would have got killed. His son did.
He wanted to be killed. His view was, what would be better than to be killed on the fields of France? Like, what?
This is where I turn on him on stage, maybe, then, because if he's going to say that, I don't understand that either. If you have an obligation to your country, and by the way, they don't need you to die in Europe now. They didn't need you to die in Cuba. But if that's your thing, fine. But then what is your obligation to your sons? What's your obligation to your wife? What's your obligation to your family and friends? What's your obligation to the other things you could do? I do. That's appalling to me.
John, if you're going to use that tone on stage, you might get punched in the snout. You know, that tone, that kind of snotty,
elitist,
that kind of righteous tone,
yes,
that might work with Jefferson. That's not going to work. You know, I think you should be a little careful.
So if you're going to slug them, are there still tickets available?
Yeah, now we're going to sell some tickets.
I'll deck you in 30 seconds, then I have to go on without you.
All right, we're out of time. You're listening to...
I can't wait. This is going to be so much fun next week. I hope everyone comes, and I promise that if I hit you, it'll be a stage hit.
Okay. Right. Don't rush the stage. And, you know, we didn't even get to, even as now, we sort of wonder what we should do on stage. But I think Roosevelt is at his best when he explains the women in his life. The program has a note that says whatever his accomplishments, the women were in his life were his greatest vexation, his greatest conundrum. And I'd like to hear his reaction to that then.
Well, his daughter, Alice, you have sons, John. I have a daughter. So, and a daughter can really mess with a father's equanimity, let's put it. And Alice was born. She had Roosevelt's energy and drive.
Yeah.
And yet nowhere to put it. And so she addressed a lot of it right at Papa.
Yeah. All right, we're out of time. So tickets for the show, not this Saturday, not tomorrow, but next Saturday, Elgin Community College. Can you be there at the Blizzard Theater, 10:30 in the morning?
Come on, come all.
Roosevelt talks on stage with me for a little while. You get to ask questions and learn and laugh. Tickets are at WGNradio.com/Teddy, or just call the Blizzard box office at Elgin Community College. We'll see you in a week, my friend.
I can't wait to see you, John. Hello, everyone. Come to the program.
I don't think you can get a seat on the floor. The balcony seats are pretty good.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Sounded like you weren't.
Here's John Williams.
Your heart wasn't into that, Steve.
I'm sorry. We're changing language sometimes, and I was watching TV, too, so.
That couldn't have had anything to do with it, could it? I've had the Blackhawks on, too. Fun to watch.
They have been watching some news events, my friend.
Okay,
I'm trying to keep you up to date with the latest.
Well, we're the radio station for the Blackhawks. But anyway, let's do the radio show now. Hi, it's John. It's 2:07 on WGNRadio.com. Thanks for finding us here. And the Blackhawks season is underway. Well, I'm really interested in this next conversation. I'm always glad to do what we do here, but I think it's good that Robert Guadian is now able to join us. He is the new field director for ICE here in Chicago. This man comes to us from Dallas. He will oversee the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office that oversees Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Missouri, Kansas, and Kentucky. Mr. Guadian, welcome to WGN. Welcome to Chicago. How are you?
Hi, John. Good, good. I'm happy to be on your show and loving Chicago. I've been here since September 1st.
Yeah.
But yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
From Dallas, right? At least that was your last post. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from?
Sure. So I'm from deep South Texas. I'm a Texan, native born. I spent my career, I'm a career law enforcement official. I'm not a political appointee. Worked my way up through the ranks of immigration, INS, back in those days, and transferred over to ICE when the Department of Homeland Security was created. And I've been with ICE ever since. My career has been spent in the great state of Texas and in Oklahoma. But I'm happy to be here today, and I'm going to be here a long time.
I wonder what drives a person to get into a position like yours, either at the peak of your, say, career, where you're overseeing six states, or maybe when you're just in the ranks of ICE or INS. I could see wanting to be a law enforcement officer. I could see wanting to be CIA. But the work that we ask ICE to do, to me, is so difficult and sometimes thankless. I wonder why someone would want to go into that line of work. You know what I mean?
So yeah, that's a good question, John. So when I was a kid, the southwest border, the law enforcement officials along the southwest border are primarily the Border Patrol. That's who we looked up to as kids. Always wanted to aspire to be one of them, and to join their ranks. I went a different route than the Border Patrol. I became an immigration inspector, working at the ports of entry, in deep South Texas, but, since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, I've been looking at the Border Patrol as my goal and immigration enforcement. That's deep South Texas. That's who we looked up to.
You married? You have kids?
I am married. Yes, I am married. My wife's a teacher. I don't have any children.
It would seem to me like it would also require a certain mindset, like... I would have great sympathy for somebody wanting to cross the border, legally or otherwise. If there's desperation in their faces, I don't know that I have the stuff to turn them away. How do you deal with that?
So for me, public service goes back a few generations. My father is a Vietnam vet. My grandfather fought in World War II. So this is a way for me to give back to my community and to honor my family, and being able to uphold the law of the land, the law passed by Congress, signed by the president, being able to enforce immigration law it gives me a great sense of pride.
Yeah.
And in addition, I love representing ICE. I think that our story is not told enough. And that's one thing I've noticed just in the short month that I've been here is that I see on the news quite a bit, a lot of misinformation regarding ICE. So I really love this opportunity to kind of set the record straight about what we do here in the great state of Illinois.
What's an example of misinformation?
So ICE does not conduct raids. Number one, we don't have any checkpoints in the city. I read earlier this week on social media that somebody said we're on the train making immigration arrests. That couldn't be further from the truth. We're not on the trains. We're not on buses. We don't have checkpoints. We don't conduct raids. Those things could not be further from the truth.
So here in Chicago, then, what dictates your action then?
So that's a really great question. So nationwide, about 70% of all of ICE's work occurs in county jails. The people that we're looking for have not only just entered the United States, they've entered the United States illegally and been arrested for a crime while they're here. So most of our efforts, 70% of our efforts nationwide, occur inside the jails. In Illinois, 0% happens in the jails. We have no other choice but to go into public spaces to make our arrests for these high priority threats to public safety, where normally in most other states, we would just be in the jail making those arrests. For an example, last year, 90% of all of ICE arrests fell into four groups. The first group are those aliens that came in illegally, and while they were here, they were convicted of a crime. The second group also came in illegally and were charged with a crime. The third group came in, actually was deported from the United States and reentered without permission, which is a felony. And the fourth group are those individuals that have been ordered removed by a federal judge and are fugitives from ICE. So 90% of our work falls into those four categories.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you never hear that in the media. What you hear is, you know, making arrests at bus stops, making arrests on trains, which
go back to the first
from the truth.
Go
we back don't to do the... any checkpoints. We don't conduct raids. We're targeted enforcement is what we do.
By the way, in our newsroom is a gentleman who I will introduce you to now, also Steve Bertrand. Steve.
Robert, yeah, and I'm sorry to interrupt.
Hi,
I'm interested in your clarification about not doing raids because we've had the president talk often about ICE raids. In fact, I'm looking at stories here from 2019 where he called the raids, quote, unquote, very successful. Many were taken out on Sunday. You just didn't know about it, on and on. But the president says you conduct raids. How do you rectify that?
No, I don't know about those quotes, but I can tell you this, that ICE conducts targeted enforcement operations. When we make an arrest in a public space, we know exactly who we're arresting. The word raids has connotations that it's an indiscriminate sweep of an area.
I see.
We don't do that.
I see. So what you're saying is you would go into a building if you knew who was there and your targets were in there, that would go in there, but that's not what you would consider or think that the most of us would consider as a raid.
Absolutely,
okay.
Correct. So
you
raids have a connotation that they're indiscriminate, and we're arresting everyone that we see with no particular purpose of why we're in that particular location.
But here in Chicago and probably elsewhere, if in the process of that you get other people in the sweep who are not any of the people in the four categories you listed, then that in a lot of people's minds is a raid. You're just gathering up people who look like or are associated with one of these people who shouldn't be here. Does that happen? Is it possible that you'll get collateral but legal residents in these sweeps?
I would say that if I were in the that's correct. I mean, if we're making a targeted enforcement action, there's always the potential that might be additional arrests made at that particular site. I would rather our arrest occur inside the jail. It's safer for everyone. Our target is in a sterile environment. It's safer for the public. It's safer for my officers. And I don't have to run the risk of arresting additional people that may be at that public location.
But that's also assuming that the individual you're looking for is, in fact, incarcerated, say, at the county lockup. Maybe they're not always being held by some other law enforcement agency, right?
So I could tell you this, in fiscal year 2019, there were more than 1,000 immigration detainers filed with the Cook County Jail, and zero were honored. A detainer is a request. We've been using it for 40 years or more. A request that asks the jail to do two things. One is notify ICE before the release of a particular criminal alien. The second is for a brief detention to allow my officers to drive to the jail to take custody of that person.
The law in Illinois forbids that, doesn't it?
So that's my understanding, and that's why I urge your listeners to engage their community leaders to allow ICE into their jails. It impacts public safety. If we can be in the jails, we don't have to be out in the community. We can arrest the worst of the worst at the jails without ever having to step foot out in a public space to make an arrest.
Respond to this. Lori Lightfoot, about that, said this. Of course we know that we're hurting ICE agents and their ability to do their job in the city. So be it. That's the point.
So I would say that, so ICE officers are also members of your community, and we're aware of the real and emotional impact that immigration enforcement has. But they're also sworn federal law enforcement officers who took an oath to enforce the laws written and enacted by our nation's elected Congress. I would say that with the sanctuary laws and policy like those that you just mentioned, ICE has no choice but to locate and arrest these released criminal aliens and other immigration violators in public places in the community. I think while everyone, including the mayor, has allowed their own opinions about immigration enforcement, we all must stand united when we are talking about facts and public safety. ICE, allowing her officers to work with ICE, is not an immigration issue. It's a public safety issue. ICE always answers the bell when our assistance is requested by our partners, our local law enforcement partners, and we'll continue doing so. It's kind of irresponsible for her to say that.
In other words, the reverse isn't true. So when you, though, are looking for a hand from local sheriff's deputies, they're not going to assist you. The story in the paper also said that so what has happened in the Chicago area is ICE agents will dial 911. They know if they call Cook County Sheriff's Police, they're not going to help. So they dial 911, and then the cops show up, and then they can give them a hand. But are you familiar with that practice?
So that detail surrounding that September 24th targeted enforcement action that you're describing is currently under an internal review. But it's important to emphasize that ICE does not ask local law enforcement agencies to make administrative immigration arrests. We may ask local law enforcement to assist with perimeter control for the safety of everyone involved, our officers, the targeted alien, and bystanders. We communicate with local law enforcement to prevent blue-on-blue incidents.
I want to go back to one of the first categories of people that you say you're interested in. You don't do raids or sweeps. You target individuals, and you broke them down by four categories, people who have broken the law and need to be arrested or detained. You said they came in here illegally. Doesn't that describe virtually the entire illegal immigrant base? I mean, that's tens of millions of people potentially in the United States. Doesn't that just sort of give you a carte blanche to say, well, we can go after anyone. They need not have committed a crime. Their presence here is illegal.
No, I think that. Let me restate the
comment on that. Again.
Sure, sure. So the four groups that ICE as an agency is targeting are those individuals that entered the United States illegally and committed a crime, a criminal charge, a local charge.
Okay, if I may then. Understood. But
sure.
Then, so if somebody is here and they're not documented, and they're working, picking grapes, they're working at a pork processing plant, they're working at a pizzeria, that they are doing that alone. Their only crime is maybe their entry into the United States. You're not interested in apprehending them?
No, I wouldn't say that I'm not interested. I would say they don't fall within the priorities that I just laid out. The 90% of our arrests occur within those other priorities.
Were you to be
I'm
made?
I'm going to go after those first.
Yeah.
I'm going to go after those that present a public safety risk first. Before ever entertaining going after someone that's here illegally, that's just trying to make a better life for his or her family.
Well, that's not a fine hair, if you ask me. So now you're being tasked with determining which crimes are sufficiently worthy of your effort, right? Because some people shouldn't be here at all. We have rules. If you're without, I know people don't like the word legal or illegal, but I'm going to use it anyway. If you're not documented, it would seem to me like you're not a legal resident of the United States. And you are going to say, but I'm going to ignore that. I wonder how much weight that carries in some of the neighborhoods.
Every law enforcement agency in the land has limited resources. We have to focus, and this is not just ICE. It speaks true to every law enforcement agency. We have to allocate our resources, and we have to address the issues that are most important that impact public safety first. I think any law enforcement agency you talk to across the United States will tell you the same thing. With limited amount of resources, you have to prioritize your arrest.
Yeah.
And ICE does the same thing. And that's why the four groups that I just described,
yeah,
those are our priorities. Not that we're ignoring everyone else, but the priorities are public safety threats. Those are the individuals that ICE is targeting.
Robert Guadiana,
I would add that everyone that we arrest is entitled to due process also. Just because someone is arrested by ICE, it doesn't mean 100% of the time that they are deported. Everyone is entitled to due process before an immigration judge, and ultimately the immigration judge will decide if that person can stay in the United States or they have to be deported.
Now, Robert Guadiana is the new field office director for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office in Chicago. So the ICE director out of Chicago for six states in this region is the man now on a phone line. He's new to our community since September. And I wouldn't say we exactly rolled out a nice welcome carpet for you. Were you surprised by the reaction that some members of the city council and the mayor gave you?
No, I'm not, because I don't think the ICE story has been told here. And that's what you will be hearing from me is that the ICE story about our priority targeted enforcement that we're doing in the city impacts the community in a positive way by taking criminal aliens out of the community and not allowing them to reoffend the communities that they came from. A lot of these criminal aliens that are being set free by the Cook County Jail are reoffending in the immigrant communities they came from.
You would think that would be a powerful sell to the people in the Hispanic communities in Chicago.
Absolutely.
But it's not. I wonder how you're going to get that message across.
Well, that message has never really been told. So that's where I'm starting. I'm putting the message out there, and I appreciate this time on the air to really explain this. There'll be more messaging to come from me, because the ICE mission is a public safety mission, and not a lot of people, they believe what they read on social media. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, I've talked to a lot of people on the other side of this issue, and they're hardworking, honest people who just, I think, feel very differently about this. I'm not going to characterize them as liars. Chicago is a sanctuary city, and not just because it might not like Donald Trump. I wonder what your reaction in general is to that phrase, sanctuary city.
So I would say that the entire state of Illinois is a sanctuary state, not target one particular location. My sense is that the as long as I can bring the message about the harm that sanctuary cities do to the community, I think more people's eyes will open. For example, just this week, the Chicago Police Department arrested a 46-year-old citizen of Mexico for possessing controlled substance. ICE filed a detainer with Cook County. That detainer was not honored. In 2006, Cook County sentenced him to 4 years for burglary of a home. Even before his 2006 convictions, he had several criminal arrests and convictions for burglary, theft, fraud, and drugs. His first conviction was for burglary in 1992 in San Diego. He's been removed from the United States 4 times. Cook County released him, and he's back in your community as we speak. He's one of my targeted enforcement actions. I will find this person, but I would have rather have had my agents and officers in the jails making those arrests. These are the type of people that are being released back into the community, not just here in Cook County, but everywhere in the state of Illinois. On Tuesday, ICE arrested a 37-year-old citizen of Mexico in Orland Park. In March of 2018, more than a year and a half ago, Orland Park police arrested him for domestic abuse and bodily harm and booked him into Cook County Jail. ICE lodged a detainer with Cook County Jail. Cook County instead released him back into the community. In addition, in 2014, he was removed from the United States.
I understand, but what's the solution to that then? So you and I both have limited time here right now, Robert, so we need to wrap this up. But I mean, so is that a state legislative issue? We need to empower municipalities or local counties to cooperate, because they'll tell me that their hands are tied.
I would say that it's the jail administrators.
They can do this.
Local leadership has to have the courage to allow ICE in their jails.
Is that breaking the law, though, when they do that? Or?
I'm not an attorney. I couldn't say.
One last thing. What about this? I know you can't speak about specific cases, but in the Route 66 pizza case on the southeast side, the local alderman there said that you took a mother with 6 children. Do you know, is that true? And how much concern is given to the children of people that ICE detains?
So like any other federal law, any other law enforcement agency in the U.S., when adults are arrested, the impacts of their crime affect their family. When they're placed in a jail by any law enforcement, to include ICE, any law enforcement agency in the land, those people are separated from their family because they're inside of a jail. Their actions, their criminal actions, have consequences. But to go to your question regarding Route 66, I'm not familiar with a mother being separated from her children in that case.
Lastly, have you met with Lori Lightfoot, the mayor, yet?
No, I have not.
Can I buy the two of you a sandwich or a salad or something? It would seem to me like I will be happy to broker a meeting between the two of you, because you seem like a reasonable person, and she is too. I don't know that the two of you are going to come to a complete understanding, but I think the two of you should be in the same room together.
So I would say that I'm not a politician. I'm a career law enforcement officer. As I said in my press conference last week, I'm open to meet with anyone. Honestly, I haven't even met with all of my employees yet. I have 13 sub offices as well. I'm trying to get as many meet and greets done as I can and get the message out there of the great work that ICE is doing. But I would welcome any meeting with the mayor or any kind of county official to discuss the good work that ICE does.
And just what will the headline be of the thing you would say to her if you were to sit down with Lori Lightfoot?
The headline would be, this is what ICE actually does. This is what we do. We protect the community. We're part of your community. We live in your community. We're from here. We're compassionate. We exercise discretion on a daily basis, and we target the worst of the worst. When it comes to immigration enforcement, we're targeting individuals that that are impacting public safety in a negative way.
Robert Guadian is the new field director in Chicago of ICE. What a pleasure to meet you, sir. Welcome to our community.
Likewise, John.
I hope we can meet in person sometime. And again, if I can be a conduit for you and anybody in town, you let me know, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks, John. Thanks, Steve.
You betcha. Thank you for your time, sir. Took more of it than we originally asked for. I was a disc jockey once upon a time, and I used to talk up this song all the time.
I love this song.
We'd hit this out of the news on WMBD in Peoria at about 3 in the afternoon, and then I'd talk it up to the ramp. I believe it's
not this version, though.
This isn't Toto Africa? This isn't the one I'm thinking of?
It's probably Weezer, isn't it?
The drums echoing tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet.
This is the original Mr. Bertrand. Ellif, what are you doing?
Well, since Toto is playing the Chicago Theater tonight at 8, I thought I'd play some fun Toto, because we all know this song.
Yeah, how do you know this song? From the first time, or did it appear somewhere else? Did it have a second life that I don't know of? What's the year of this song? This is like 1980.
Time to crank it.
This is 19 I Want to Forget.
Stand by, Jen's gonna sing along to the song. 3, 2, 1, go.
Gonna take a lot to drag me away from you.
So, Weezer remade this, was it 2 years ago?
Right.
And it was so successful, then they came out with a whole album of covers.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah. You're talking about Weezer covering. Did they cover just.
It was this song, that's what kind of started it, I think.
1982. All right, so they're at Chicago Theater tonight at 8. Tickets still available, $29. Ticketmaster's got them. Naperville has Oktoberfest going on today until 10 o'clock. 5 to 10, noon to 10 tomorrow. $10 for kids, 15 adults. Lawn games, pumpkin carving, photo booths, stuff like that. What do you like?
The Fall Bulb Festival. I've already seen pictures from it. It's at the Chicago Botanic Gardens. My girlfriend went on her lunch break today. It runs today, tomorrow, and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. There is a pyramid of pumpkins and gourds that is maybe about 10 feet tall. It looks pretty amazing. But there's plenty of other things going on, live music, cider, wine, and beer able to be purchased. There's lots of stuff for the kids with live music. And the gourd mountain that I just mentioned, a straw bale maze, and other family activities.
You know, I saw on Channel 9 today, and Brenda and I drove by it, a adult Halloween place. Like, they've got a maze and stuff like that, but it's very boozy, you know. So, like, when you get through the maze, there's a bar there. And if you go the other way, there's a bar there. So you drink and you walk around pumpkins and haystacks. It's very Instagram-friendly. It's a lot of good Insta poses and places.
Is that on Elston?
Yes, it is. Okay. Yes, it is. And I don't remember the exact name of it. But it's funny because when they're selling it, they must have said three times how Insta-friendly it is.
Yeah.
Which, to me, is like, am I really having fun? Or am I just in a place that has a real good place to take a picture that looks like me having fun?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or you do the fake fun pictures, the ha-ha-ha.
Well, that's it.
For posing. I still have not nailed the fake posing.
Also going on in town this weekend, Bengston's Pumpkin Fest begins this weekend in Homer Glen. Rides, it's kid-friendly, petting zoo, lots of pumpkins, $21 this weekend, 10 to 9 tomorrow, 10 to 8 on Sunday. More information at pumpkinfarm.com, $21 to get in. Excuse me, and it'll cost you $21 to get in, I'm not judging. What do you like?
More fall. The Fall Fest at Lincoln Park Zoo, Friday through Sunday. Photos with a giant pumpkin, pumpkin carvers. There's yummers, holiday snackies. That's my terminology. Climbing adventures, face painting, and the Lionel Train Adventure. Now, tomorrow, though, there you can start the morning with Zumba at the zoo at 9:30 in the morning. It goes until 11 a.m. It's at the Nature Boardwalk. So,
is this the... I have Chicago Park District holding Halloween in the parks today at 7 at Northerly Island.
Totally different.
Hocus Pocus screening and Fall Festival perfect for kids tomorrow. 10 a.m. at Union Park. That's for free.
Yeah.
Northerly Island. Oh, that's fun.
So I Northerly Island is free. The Fall Fest at Lincoln Park Zoo is free. They're just, you know, some add-ons bring a little bit of cash.
There's the AIDS Run and Walk taking place tomorrow at 9 a.m. You can still register. $50 on site. Opening ceremonies begin at 9:30. That's Big Do. Takes place on the southeast lawn outside Soldier Field. You're going to see a lot of folks tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Give me one or two more things you like.
You know, there's a lot more races going on this weekend, but I'm first going to get to the best one, the Lincoln Square Apple Festival. It starts at 9 a.m. Saturday and Sunday, so if you're up early, you can go to a festival that doesn't start at noon. Lots of different apple treats. The middle of the day tomorrow in Lincoln Square in that little Giddings area, pooch costuming contest.
Oh, that's nice. What's the matter?
The apple pie at that Apple Fest is bomb.
Really?
There we go.
Yes.
No kidding.
Right there.
And it's not super sweet. It's low sugar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I love me some apple pie. Apple crisp, apple pie, apple tarts. What about the pooch thing?
I think that all of it's there.
I was going to say, they just keep serving it all day. They keep making it.
Apple pie.
Tables.
This is at Lincoln Square,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right off the west. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the like selling price there with me is that 9 a.m. start because nothing starts that early. And for us early birds, you know, you can get out there and get your apples done.
Mm-hmm.
The doggy contest?
Yeah, the dog contest. A pooch costume and contest parade. And that is at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So even if you don't have a dog to bring and dress up, you can go and watch all the cute little puppers.
Chainsmokers are playing at the United Center tonight, 7 o'clock, $44 if you can still get in. Ticketmaster's got them. The Bears play the Raiders away. That's Sunday. They're in London. And Northwestern Wildcats are at the Nebraska Cornhuskers. That's an away game. Wildcats on WGN Radio tomorrow, 2:30 pregame, 3 o'clock kick.
All right, so we got some more races. Let's go to the opposite ends of the city. The Bucktown 5K is on Sunday morning, closing a ton of streets near North Avenue and in the Bucktown area. Then the Comer Children's Race for the Kids 5K is in Hyde Park on Sunday. So those are both going on. And then tomorrow, there's another women's race that's going to run right past Soldier Field where the AIDS Walk is. So there's a lot of athletic events going on in the downtown area tomorrow.
So plan accordingly. Lots to do in this swell city of ours. What's your bright side? This is what we do on Fridays. We close the week. We start your weekend a little early on WGN Radio. We want you to tell us something good in your world. Now, it can be something big, like we're going to have a baby, or it can be something small, like the chicken sandwiches are in on the corner of my neighborhood. Where are we on chicken sandwich Fest hunt? What was the chain that everybody was losing their mind about the chicken sandwiches?
Popeyes.
Popeyes. Oh. Are Popeyes chicken sandwiches back?
We were just talking about it with Bill and Wendy, and I think they are not.
So they still don't have them restocked and because you know what? I've kind of forgot about them now. You don't want to wait too long that you got to restart the momentum for the crazy chicken sandwich thing. I saw yesterday a story about the wait time for fast food restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And Chick-fil-A, which makes a dang good chicken sandwich. And really, that's what this whole Popeyes thing was about. A better sandwich than Chick-fil-A's.
Mm-hmm.
Was the slowest of places to get fast casual or fast food.
Okay.
It's the slowest. Dunkin' Donuts was the quickest. Maybe because you just got to get... They're going to pour some coffee, hand you a donut. How long does that take? Although some people can get, you know, warmed up sandwiches there.
Wendy's. Wendy's is pretty quick.
I think, here's the funny thing. The average wait time at the slowest place, mm-hmm, Chick-fil-A, is, what would you guess?
2 minutes.
Yeah, it's five. I mean, it's the same thing.
Really?
Okay, but 5 minutes is not a long time.
That's still really long. At Wendy's, you order at the little box, you drive around, and they're like, here you go, through the window. And it's like, how did you even get time to make my burger?
Yeah. Well, I got bad news for you. They made that burger Thursday.
Oh, man.
But I guess it's just a reminder of how, in fact, quick and convenient food is in America. It's 5 minutes. Whenever I walk by the Chick-fil-A, and I do just about every day on my way to the L, that place is packed. I mean, it is packed with people standing around waiting for the sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're waiting 5 minutes, which must feel like a long time in this day and age. But that's about as long as an average wait is anywhere. Maybe you wait longer at some places, but that's what the story was yesterday. Okay, 312-981-7200. We'll pause here. 312-981-7200. Call or text. It's the bright side.
I'm counting on you now. Give me some good news.
It's Friday.
Some things in life are bad.
Call 312.
Really make you mad.
981-7200. Call me now. We're on the stream. We need you to join the show.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble.
You're an out-of-stater, especially. Give us a call. Tell us some good news in your world. What's your bright side? We do this on Fridays.
And always look on the bright
whistle now.
Side
whistle! Hey, not bad.
Always
not bad. That's pretty good.
Side
round two, everybody whistle.
Pretty good.
Yeah, Kevin leading us on the whistling part of the little song there.
We need everybody in the station in on that.
When we do that, I think, I don't know, Kev, I don't want to crowd your spot there. I mean, that's kind of your specialty, but it was kind of fun when we all do it, don't you?
I kind of like it. It takes the pressure off my shoulders.
Yeah, really. Hey, Kim Gordon in the newsroom, give me some good news. Why are you smiling today?
My middle son, Jeremy, is 30 years old today.
Oh, my God. How is that possible?
It is hard to believe.
He's an adult today.
He wasn't yesterday?
It's not until you turn 30.
30? I didn't know
that. You don't have to act like an adult.
I don't know what... Really? So the 20s, you get a pass still?
Yeah.
That's working out for you, Kev, real well, isn't it? Now think about it. You don't have to behave yet. What's your bright side, Jen?
Well, when you're in your 30s, though, you have to do things like this, which is adulting. And as of today, I am credit card debt free.
No credit card debt as of today?
No credit card debt.
Jealous. Congratulations.
God. All our years. My bright side is, with 12 seconds left, the Blackhawks just scored a goal, so now they're only down 3-2.
Alex DeBrinket, the newly extended Alex DeBrinket.
Yeah, I know. I hope he has as good a season as he did last, because we're going to need guys to step up this year. Down 3-1 to the Flyers.
3-2.
Prague, but now 3-2. Hopefully the Blackhawks, as the second period ends, will make up the difference in the final period. Bright side, Kevin, you got one for us?
Ooh, I'm golfing with my brother tomorrow morning. A little fall ball, John.
Look on the bright side of life.
By the way, if you call or text, you get a Bright Side of Life pin, courtesy of our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. It's a lovely little pin. It says Bright Side on there. It's got a smile, sunshine.
I have a bright side.
All right, I'll let go.
Tomorrow, I don't have any plans except in the evening.
That's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing. Are our phones working? We don't have calls coming in.
They're working.
Call 312-981-7200.
Don't make it obvious.
Do you have streams?
I could pretend that. I have people waiting on hold, you know.
We're getting so many calls, the lines are jammed.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Nobody can get through.
I don't normally have to work that hard on this.
Well, I got some text here.
Okay, you're texting. We appreciate that.
All right.
Call as well.
This one is great because it's anonymous. Only the person left their name, but I'm not going to give their name. His bright side is that he found out his wife is pregnant with number 2.
Very nice.
Kevin reached the 3-month mark, so they can't tell anyone.
Oh yeah,
but they told us.
that's a safe zone, folks. Wait until the 3rd month. That's fair enough.
Yeah. So 224's daughter is turning 4 this weekend. Happy birthday, Chelsea!
Happy birthday, Chelsea!
219 says that their bright side is that they finally had a Lou Malnati's pizza for the first time this week, and it's because of a gift card they won from us a few months ago.
They never had a Lou Malnati's pizza?
Bless you. You just finally had one.
I just had this last weekend, my first Pequot's pizza ever.
Did you?
And it's a really deep dish pizza.
Uh-huh.
And they put all the groceries on there. We had cheese, sausage, mushroom, green pepper, onion, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's loaded. And there's a line. Mm-hmm. Always a line at Pequot's. Next time I get it, I'm going to get extra tomato sauce because it's not that tomato-y.
Can I give a tip too as well?
I always go extra
cheese on it because I know exactly what you're talking about, John. Ask for extra cheese, which seems excessive, but it's not.
No, I completely agree with you on that because there's a lot to love about it.
Right.
It's really generous with the ingredients. It's a good crust. I love the room. I think they need more something.
A little more wet, right?
Like yes.
A little more cheese sauce.
Yes.
It's very good. It's great. But I always get a little extra cheese on there. That's my tip for you.
Thank you very much. And it could be a little tangier for me.
I like to go extra crispy, too.
Extra crispy? Well, do you do the thin crust, Kim, or do you do the deep dish at Pequot's?
I like them both
really extra
crispy. I like my cheese very well done. And,
they tell
Either
you
way.
That it's going to be
crisp on black on the edges because the way they cook
caramelized
it.
Caramelized crust.
Yeah, exactly.
I was their neighbor for like 7 years.
Were you really?
Yeah, so I've probably had a lifetime worth of Pequod's pizza within that.
How do you order it?
You know, every different type of way. Yeah, they knew me very well. Very well. But I would always do the deep dish, caramelized crust, pepperoni, olives, mushrooms, and extra garlic.
Yes, sir. Slay, who are you, sir?
Brian Altimer.
Brian Altimer is joining us again for the Bright Side segment, one of Rokan's producers. What are you doing, my friend?
Okay, prepping for the show, actually, but I had to tell you this, Bright Side. My grandfather got a new snowblower. I was going to buy a snowblower this weekend, and he gave me his old one, so he saved me hundreds of dollars. So thanks, Grandpa.
Score.
A used snowblower is a snowblower, correct? Yep. All right, let's pick up a couple of phone lines. Bridget, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? Why are you smiling, Bridget? You're on the air.
Hi, I am going to a high school football game tonight to watch my daughter march in the band.
Oh, I love high school football games in the fall.
What game? What game?
Yeah. I actually live in Ventura, California, so Buena versus Pacifica.
All right. Who are we rooting for? I'll check the scores tonight.
We are rooting for Buena.
All right, go Buena. All right.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Our first bright side calls from California.
Falling
Les, you're
California.
On WGN. Les, why are you smiling? You're on the air.
I won Blackhawk tickets today.
Oh, no kidding. Who did you win them from?
From you guys, just about an hour or two ago.
Woo-hoo!
I'm glad you're listening. Thank you for the call. Lori, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? Why are you smiling, Lori?
It's a beautiful day in Indiana. I'm riding around with my top down in a yellow Mustang.
What's the temperature there in Indiana?
I don't know, really. It's 65, I suppose.
Yeah, I love it. Is the sun shining? It's kind of cloudy downtown Chicago.
Oh, it's a little cloudy, but the sun's out.
Take it while you can get it. Very well done. Thank you for the call.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Rokan, have you ever wanted to be on the bright side?
John, no. Do I sound like the guy who wants to be on the bright side?
No, that's why I put it that way. Come on, Ro, you can do it. Come on.
Well, I woke up this morning. I'll go with that.
Breathing.
I was shallow breathing, but I did wake up, so with chest pain. So I think I'm okay. I mean, I'm here.
That's the most Ro bright side ever.
Anna DeVlantis, could you represent better the show?
I think I can. There's always something to look forward to, right? This weekend, we've got some massive puzzles and Halloween decorations all lined up to decorate the house with Halloween big in our house. And my daughter cannot wait to unload the boxes and just put them everywhere.
Are you guys a large candy bar house or a small fun size?
No, we go to my Uncle Petey's, and he's at one of those crazy neighborhoods on the north side off of Broadway, roughly, 5,500 north or so.
Okay.
And they have 1,200 to 1,400 trick-or-treaters every single year, and they count.
Wow.
Yep. It's one of those crazy all-out Halloween neighborhoods. People come in from other neighborhoods and stuff like that. They do full candy bars.
We live in that area, and we have block parties. We shut down the block.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah, through the
it's
city.
It's so fun.
That's the way to do it. Yeah.
That's true.
Well, you live downtown, though.
I do.
I
live in a townhouse community that's got its own street kind of thing, so they cut that off and they let all the kids run up and down the street. So it's actually that works out great. I hide. I turn off all the lights in my house and I crawl around on my stomach and I don't turn the TV on until about midnight. So because I always forget. And it's so easy to forget Halloween, right? Because no one ever talks about it.
No, how would you know?
Right.
There's no indication of it anywhere.
When you go to the store, it's like, where is the candy? I don't know where it is. Like Walgreens, literally, you can't even get drugs at Walgreens anymore. Mm-hmm. Do they go back there and it's all Halloween candy in the pharmacy?
You trip over it.
You go into Costco, man. There's enough there for you can probably choke to death on all of the chocolate just by walking in.
I want to live in a community where the adults walk around with empty rocks glasses.
Oh, I used to live in Andersonville, and that was the best trick-or-treating ever.
Yeah,
because my daughter was that age, except there was always one guy that was like, it had popcorn balls and he was like handing them out to the kids with his bare hand.
Unwrapped.
I made these in my basement, and you're like, and I was like,
don't eat those kids.
Just trying to remember to get the cotton ball out or the whatever popcorn ball out before she touches it.
Yeah,
you
right.
do have to scrutinize the candy. You gotta walk along with the kids.
But everybody had a cocktail
stuff. Yeah.
And they're pouring for you. You know, go to the right house and they'll pour,
Very nice.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, they're all using solo cups in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing up on the stream today?
Mr. Ben Bradley is going to join us. Well, the first hour on the CLTV as well. So Ben Bradley is going to join us. Also, Adam Hogue is going to join us. Talk about the Bears. He's in London town.
Nice.
Where the Bears. I saw pictures on the Bears website today about that had the, which I thought was super cool, them on the plane. I'm trying to figure out what kind of plane they were on.
Why was there a lot of room?
And how were the seats? Were
they were
big
all
enough?
Like sort of first class, like lie flats.
Okay.
But they were all in them. So that must have been some sort of like crazy team charter thing that they
did. Yeah, no kidding. It wasn't just a first class section.
No, and it wasn't even built like a first class section. It was like it was weird. They were like, it looked almost like a military plane, but with lie flats. I don't think we do that in the military, but if they, you know. So it's, so they talked about, you know, all the guys going over there. And they're trying, and I think they're getting even with me because I did make the point that I thought they should have gone earlier in the week, like Oakland did.
Yeah.
So they get used to the time.
How long have they been over there?
They just got there.
Yeah, this morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Today is Friday.
Yeah, game
they
Sunday.
They play Sunday.
Mm-hmm. I'm never shocked. Ready by that.
I'm shocked.
I know.
It takes a couple of days.
It does for me.
This is like going to Denver. You got to get acclimated.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. And Oakland, I think, got there on what? Kev, when did Oakland get there? Wednesday?
I believe Tuesday, I want to say.
Tuesday. I mean, how about that?
Yeah.
Now, it's 2 hours more for them, so it's an eight-hour differential for them than it's 6 hours for us. But still, it's not.
Oh,
and
no.
Keep in mind, many teams have done this.
Same
procedure.
I know, but I want to know the win-loss percentage.
Ooh, that's
I swear to God,
thing.
If they lose, I am blaming this on the Friday arrival.
It would
especially
be
if one of our guys falls asleep during the game.
Then you know, right.
Well, who would be able to tell? Now that Mitch is out, who could tell? Or Mitch falling asleep on the sidelines with the clipboard? I like that.
Who's starting a quarterback this weekend?
It'll be Chase Daniel for you, the veteran backup.
Right.
It's not nice to be happy about that, but are we cool
Listen,
about that?
Chase, when Chase was the backup for Sid Luckman, he did very well. Greg Landry.
What was he, 10 years, and how many snaps has he taken?
70 or something, right?
It does increase your longevity. If you can be in the NFL making NFL money for a decade, but you don't have to get hit that much. I mean, that's...
a great life.
I think that is.
That is. Oh, if you have the mother of a... You want your child to be the backup quarterback, not the quarterback,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Right, yeah, but what is it, like $30 million the guy's made already, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Really?
Life is
the highest paid backup in the NFL.
Yeah,
wow.
Because he's, and you can see why, because he knows what he's doing. He's like a coach back there.
Right. Didn't you think he looked pretty poised?
I thought so. I thought very much so.
Felt very comfortable.
All right.
Have a really good weekend.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.